Wolverine. Wolverine.
Hello, and welcome to the Examination Podcast, where we burn it all down. I'm Quentin Emler. Joining me this week, it's Dane Rainier.
See, burn it down was going to be my intro when you took it. So I guess I bring it back.
And Kelsey Stretz.
Because we don't need no water, let the mother.
Oh, God, I thought you were going to make me bring out the bleeps water in under 30 burn. Seconds. God!
We're starting off with some bangers here.
Some fire.
Just like the Inferno series did. Four issues, a quarter of the way through. You don't have to worry about bloat on this series. We're going to jump right into it this week. But first, let's hook up to Cerebro and see what's new in the world of Marvel. And nothing's newer to us than season 6 of the Examination Podcast. Our final season, the format's different. The people are the same. We're going to talk Inferno. We're going to kind of sideline the other books because we want to be focused solely on Hickman's vision, what he's trying to do with these books. And we're going to take a pause on the other ones, but I'm going to be honest. When we talk about Inferno next time, we'll check in with Hellions because that's happening. So just deal with it.
I can't talk him out of it. No, I'm kidding. It's a good book. Mr. I know
Sinister's
I get vilified
in Inferno. I mean, yeah, it's linked. It's directly Psylocke. Linked. Yeah, they're
so
directly linked.
We have to talk about it.
We have to.
Yeah, have
the rest of these characters don't show up in any other books.
Nope. Byro, he's not in anything. He might be in a Marauders. Depends which Marauders we're reading.
Bishop's like not even the best piece in chess.
That's true.
It's true. That's yeah.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and see what's doing in the world of Marvel. First, let's check in with What If, as we have been. We're episode back. We're going to talk about episodes that aren't as important as other episodes, but we're going to talk about Party Thor, the Looney Tunes zany episode of What If, where Thor's gone wild, and he's got his own Gone Wild Reddit thread of Thor. And what'd you guys think of this like silly, fun episode?
I mean, I think that's exactly what it was, right? I appreciate that it didn't try and be something more. It was goofy. It was entertaining. And I think it did what it wanted to do. So kudos to that. It clearly wasn't the most influential or important of all the episodes, but it had very funny moments.
Yeah, I would agree. Kelsey?
Yeah. It was a fun episode. I enjoyed the episode. I don't get how it's a what if in the fact that Loki wasn't his... If Loki was not raised with him, I don't get how that affected him. It would have made more sense if you just said, what if Odin never banished him? Like, if he never had that arc.
Yeah, the prompt doesn't really mean anything.
The prompt means nothing. Like, because his behavior...
And the story's wrapped up. And he's basically where he was after Thor.
Right.
The first movie.
But he's not even the Thor he was after the first movie. I mean, he's the Thor he was before the middle of the first movie. And that's all he is. Which you could have done... Which he still had Loki all through his existence up to that point. So really... It should have been, what if Thor were never stripped of his power and banished? That would have made more sense. Other than that...
But then we don't get Troll Loki.
That is true. Troll Loki was fun.
The Ice Bros.
It was a funny, enjoyable episode. A standalone, and it does lead, it looks like, into the following weeks, which I hear is a banger.
Oh. I've seen it. It makes it connects everything. It's just awesome.
Is it better than the Doctor Strange one?
I got some new. Well, is it better? Does it have to be different than the Doctor Strange one? Ooh.
No.
What if?
This is how Quentin loiters stuff over your head when he has free time to watch an episode in the first day that it comes out.
Well, he took a half day at work today because I don't think they go to school on Wednesdays or something weird. I don't know.
Dude, I go to school on Wednesdays. I just have to wait for my wife so I can work out. And sometimes I'll turn on What If. And sometimes she says she'll be home in 30 minutes and it's an hour.
Got that beefcake.
You get but a couple, start get a couple what ifs in there.
It's called not having. What if you didn't have children? Is really the what if.
Oh my god. The BMW on my front would be real nice, I'll tell you that.
I would probably watch it in my third living room.
My many acres of land.
So, hopping on over, we're going to keep it in the MCU or not. Let's talk Spider-Man's universe. Venom 2, Let There Be Carnage, comes out this week. I know that Dane has a harder time with the two younger kids getting out to see it. So I'm pretty sure, Dane, you're not going to make it out for this one. But Kelsey, are you going to go check this one out?
I am. I'm actually going to take my wife for our anniversary. She doesn't know that. But because she likes Tom Hardy.
It's going to get spoiled when she listens to this tomorrow.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Right.
Correct.
You feel pretty safe dropping this information here?
I feel so safe dropping this information. But, yeah. I mean, we're going to check it out. But am I excited for it? I'm excited to see Woody Harrelson as Carnage because I think he's a good actor and this is his type of role. I like Tom Hardy as an actor.
J.K. Simmons is J. Jonah Jameson.
He's always good.
You can put J.K. Simmons in anything and my interest goes up like 5 points.
But
100%.
Do I like him as Eddie Brock in Venom? Not 100%. I don't really like how they've been doing Venom with some of his like humorous parts.
And honestly, Venom's such a good foil to Spider-Man.
Yeah, divorcing him from Spider-Man.
Spider-Man was unleashed, like what he would be. I don't know. It's just it losing also, some of that element hurts.
You lost Spider-Man because you also lost the Spider-Man back in or in the black, you know, where he's got the symbiote. Yeah. So you lost all of that. So you lose all of the. Yeah, it hurts a bit.
Well, Eddie Brock becomes less interesting, I think. And whenever you take the, he's worse than Peter Parker, but he's got to be better. You know what I mean?
But they could have said, you know what? What we'll do instead, we're going to just take him to space. We'll do Flash Thompson. We'll do something, you know, a little more devoid. You could still connect him to the Sony Spider-Man universe if you wanted.
Yeah.
I don't, you know.
I want to contribute to this conversation. Who's a better Venom, Tom Hardy or Topher Grace?
I will say Tom Hardy.
Irrelevant.
Wow.
I feel like that's a real stab at Tom Hardy, by the way.
Like, Topher Grace, I think, could have been good, but there was just such, like...
Come on, Eric Foreman was never going to be Venom.
No, he shouldn't have been. Like,
I appreciate what they were going for. It just wasn't done well. He's not a great Eddie Brock in the same way that Tom Hardy's not. Like, yeah. Eddie Brock was... they were trying to go with, what if a darker, like, Tobey Maguire Spider-Man...
Dude, he's more of like a hardcore.
I'm pretty sure
journalist.
They were trying to do. He's not really Eddie Brock. Like, he's not the character that was in the comics at all.
He's
the
more Venom hardcore, like YouTube style journalist. You know, it's like I'm over here in this war.
Well, Tom Hardy one. But either way, bad is bad. Neither of them are really that close to the comic. It's like whatever.
In fairness, the closest connection I have to Venom is like Maximum Carnage, the video game. So I just want whoever plays Venom to be like three times the physical size of whoever plays Spider-Man.
Know everything you need to know about Venom from Maximum Carnage. Bigger Spider-Man with a mouth and he can bite people.
I mean, Tom Hardy accomplishes that, so yeah.
That's what I mean. That's why I see Tom Hardy. I'm like, okay, that makes sense. If you put Bane in a symbiote, I'd buy that.
Yeah. I mean, he is three times.
I was born into the symbiote. let's go ahead and jump switching gears from movies and shows. We're gonna cover the whole gamut today. Let's end the news with talking about games and comics. So Guardians of the Galaxy game.
We're gonna talk about the lawsuit against Marvel.
Which one? Oh, to take the rights and characters.
The Steve Ditko
one?
I said comic news, but apparently Kelsey can't wait.
You said comic news. That is comic news.
I know. He said we're moving to comic news.
Now you
take it, Kelsey. Take your news.
Well, apparently Steve Ditko's family, because he did, are suing Marvel over the rights to several characters that Steve Ditko was a part of and allegedly created. The funny thing about it is their lawyer is the same one that sued DC for the rights to Superman for Superman's creator's family. And the lawyer for Marvel is the one that defended DC. And I'm guessing
was successful in that one.
And DC was successful. So I'm guessing the Marvel lawyer is going to show up and say, we argued this with DC here. This judges have already made this decision. Just copy it.
It seems odd that it's reusing so many attorneys, but I also feel like, you know, why, you know, somebody's already litigated comic books. Why go get somebody else?
Right.
Well, because one of them did it unsuccessfully.
Well, yeah.
I guess. But, I mean, maybe there's stronger evidence. And that's why he's willing to do this one. Because he's like, I see that you have this and I think I can twist it with what you have to show.
Like, what are you going to get? You're just going to get the rights and sell it back to him. You're going to sit on these because, one, the fandom will hate you for sitting on it.
That's why you have to sit on it.
I mean, but you're gonna take it and go.
You either die
now,
a hero.
Marvel, buy it from us.
I want to use those Ditko bucks to sit on this. I got a big enough goose egg.
Anyways, Quinn, is there other news you wanted to get into?
Quality podcasting kicking off season 6 of the Examination Podcast.
Ditko bucks, trade them in here.
Ditko dollars, come on, Ditko dollars.
You're right. What was it? Who did Batman? Bill Butterfinger?
Yes. What? No. Yes. Yes. Bill. Bill Finger. It's Bill Finger.
Bill
yeah.
Finger.
Yeah.
Bill Finger. No. Bucks.
Dane, go look at new stuff with Batman. It will say Bob Kane and Bill Finger. Now,
because what is going on right now?
Did you not know that?
No, I don't even know Bill what we're Finger, talking about
the
anymore.
Family of Bill Finger litigated against DC and Bob Kane, or at least the remembrance of Bob Kane, about who created Batman, and successfully got Bill Finger's name plastered all over anything new. I think from Batman versus Superman on,
yeah,
it will say Batman created by Bob Kane and Bill Finger.
All right, so let's talk. There's two more things we want to talk about. Guardians of the Galaxy, the game. Any interest in getting it? Anybody going to check that one out?
I mean, I would love to, but I don't play video games enough.
Yeah.
So,
and it's a little old for your kids. It's not the type of game.
If I catch myself in a cash flush mood, probably during the winter.
It's a 50-50 shot.
When it's stuck. You're stuck inside. Right. You don't have anything to spend money on.
Right.
And all of a sudden, you're like, well, that bank account's got some numbers in it I didn't imagine. There's
some wiggle room here.
That's right. And I might. You know, I might, like, sit down in my basement with my PlayStation and be looking at it and go, hey. But, you know, talking to my kids, I'm like, you guys want to get this game? And they'll be like, yeah. I'm like, cool.
And then 10 minutes later, they'll be like, this game's kind of boring, Dad.
It doesn't matter. Well, yeah, they'll be real mad because I'll be the one playing it. And they'll have to watch.
You just give them controllers with no batteries in it, man. That's 101.
Textbook dad. That would work with the youngest one. The oldest one, I don't think will buy it.
Oh, well, you might have to attach a flashlight to his controller.
Way so too smart to that.
Smart. I like that.
No, it does look very cool from what I've seen, what I've heard of it. It is, to be honest, probably a wait until it dips in price, you know, goes on sale or something. But it definitely sounds like something cool enough that I'd be interested in checking out once it comes out.
They had a low-key burn on the Marvel Avengers game.
Yeah?
Well, somebody goes, pretty sure they built this in the Avengers engine because it's, what's that? Square Enix? Or like,
right.
You can tell graphically it looks very similar to that game. So I bet they could use Avengers assets to save money and include Avengers in future expansion packs and other DLC. And then the person, they're just like, just to be clear, this has nothing to do with the Marvel Avengers game. And if you're looking for that kind of game, you're looking at the wrong place. It's just like,
I think it's a low-key burn.
Oh, I think it's definitely a burn. Like, disassociating yourself as much as you can from that game.
I guess I can see it.
If you're looking for anything to do with that game, that you're looking in the wrong,
place.
They've also been announcing the new Spider-Man game, and that's supposed to be darker than the first one.
Yeah, they said it's the Empire Strikes Back, but who doesn't say that about their second
game? Dude, everyone says that.
I feel like, I'm pretty sure the next iPhone, they're going to be like, it's the Empire Strikes Back iPhones.
It bugs so much faster.
It's got dark mode.
If you're not careful, it blows up and takes your hand with it.
All right. Spoilers for Empire Strikes Back.
Jeez, Kelsey.
Right. Sorry.
Last piece of news. Allegedly,
R. Kelly quotes.
So that what was it? Was it? It was the writer of X-Force, Benjamin Percy. Tweeted out how excited he was at the Marvel Creative Summit. I guess within the last 2 weeks, they had the final Marvel Creative Summit with Hickman, where he was passing on the reins, talking about the future of the X-Men line. And there were a few guests in there that their faces were covered. New people to the X-Men offices, the X-Men branch. One of those people was allegedly, based on the fact that, or somebody in their house, suppose was Kieran Gillen, because they did a screenshot where they showed like his door, his bookcase, same books on there, same door, same wall colors, same bookcase, like everything was the same. But like he didn't do a great job of covering it up.
That's the highest level of nerd. You're like, I recognize the books on that shelf and the layout. I know who this is. I've seen their background from their screenshots enough.
Well, somebody has too much time. Wrote an article for somebody else that has too much time, Dane, who talked to his friend who has too much time, me, about what happened.
Who's now telling somebody else who has too much time, Kelsey.
But anyway, Kieran Gillen had a run right around Fear Itself. It's, you know, between Avengers, X-Men, and I want to say Civil War, Secret Invasion. That was pretty noted for being excellent with the X-Men. It put Magic on the team, I believe, the core team.
That's the Extinction team run.
Dane, how excited are you to, if Kieran Gillen's the new, I heard he's not the head of X. They want to be very clear that, like, Duggan's not the head of X. Gillen's not the head of X. Like, it's just a new tool on the X-Men line. How does that excite you?
I'm excited about that. I like Gillen in general. I've liked a lot of his stuff that he's made. He's got a great Young Avengers run, and I enjoyed his X-Men. I think the Extinction Team era is a great era of X-Men, and you're right, it was Magic being kind of pushed to the forefront during that one, and so I don't know, I really liked his work with X-Men, so I'm excited to see what he might be working on, and perhaps most notable to you two that will make you happy or interested is that in many ways Gillen really created the Sinister that we know right now.
Yeah,
because that
the idea of the
just sort of the kind of the thinks he's suave, fancy. The cape is important, and just having like clones, just like hundreds and hundreds of clones.
I forget whose tagline it is, but who's the character that's too gay to function? Do you remember who I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah. That's from Mean Girls.
Okay, Mean Girls. Yeah. It reminds me of he's the one that made Sinister too gay to function. Like, is how I would describe
the cape and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. No, he's just a fabulous Sinister.
Right.
And I love it.
Truly.
And that wasn't, I think now, like, we just take it for granted. We appreciate it so much. And don't get me wrong.
Oh,
like,
Wells. Without his influence, there's no Hellions.
He got rid of the flat top.
Right. That Sinister really is owed to Gillen.
Well, Ultimate X-Men got rid of the flat top first.
Yeah, Kelsey.
That's true. He wore a beanie and had tattoos.
He wore a beanie and had tattoos. Yeah.
And guns.
I remember.
I don't even remember what his... I think his power in Ultimate was just not showing up on security cameras. It was pretty bad. But he did kick Xavier's butt by throwing him downstairs.
Anyone who
grabbed a crippled guy and threw him down the stairs.
Anyone who can bring us that Sinister is welcome.
K.O.
That's the next to me.
You guys ready to actually talk about the reason we're here?
I mean, we're only 20 minutes in.
Inferno, number one. We're going to go and recap it. I think we'll wait till the end to discuss. But we'll probably go through with the recap. Then we're basically going to start back from the beginning of the book and just go piece by piece and talk about the things that stood out to us. We got Hickman on the writing credit. We got Shitty on the...
Who? Do you have to... Hey, do you have to... Shitty. Do you have to cut that out, Dane?
Yeah, probably.
Well, no, what? That's how I pronounce his name.
Is that what it is?
Shitty.
Well, that's not what you said.
Well, but I mispronounced it. But I didn't know.
I bet Kelsey just mispronounced something earlier in the episode.
Well, let's go ahead and jump right in. So at the beginning of this book, we jump right in. We got a shot of Emma Frost in the nesting grounds where the clones are being grown. And similar to House of X, where Cyclops and Jean free themselves from the golden eggs, we get two classic X-Men characters being birthed from these eggs, rebirthed, if you will. But this time, it's not Cyclops and Jean. It's none other than Eric and Charles, Xavier and Magneto. And instead of Professor X saying to me, my X-Men, it's Emma Frost.
Yeah, she is.
What caused these two to die? We don't know yet. But Krakoa has other problems. That comes as Orcus is back in full swing as we discover that Krakoa has been sending X-Force into space over and over again, attempting to kill Nimrod, but never succeeding. But Orcus is starting to figure out resurrection as they realize they keep fighting the same mutants over and over, and they never come back having learned anything from their previous deaths.
Hey, let's take a turn and let's pop some bottles. It's champagne time, guys. Because now scientists, including Moira and Taggart, they found a way to cure all of mutantdom. But there's an explosion at the lab. And who would be arriving? None other than Mystique and Destiny and the master of gothic romance, Pyro. They have it out with Moira, telling her, hey, we get it. You have a mutant power that involves resurrection because Destiny can't see you. And that's a problem. They say you are going against your kind and you better fix that. If not, we're going to show up every time and we're going to hurt you so bad. Now, to prove that point, they then have Pyro hurt her so bad. And thus ends life number 3.
Back in the 10th life of Moira, the now life, the combination of several high-profile organizations coming together to form Orcus grants them some pretty high-profile science, as we see that they are monitoring all Krakoan Gate activity. They've registered some of Moira's activity, and along with an assist from Horticulture, they figure out a location in Paris houses not one, but two gates, allowing for Moira's previously undetected travel to her no place.
Hey, we're back at No Place. And Moira's meeting up with Magneto and Professor X. She's kind of miffed at them and their basic inability to accomplish any of the things she told them while running their new nation. Number one, they didn't stop Nimrod. Professor X is like, oh, Nimrod might be an inevitability. She goes, what about Destiny? How about you guys, you know, I don't know, remove her from existence? No traces, no nothing. I mean, you know, she's sent here to this no place because no one needs to know about her because she's so important. Yet she's getting a little upset that in 1,000 years, they still can't figure out how to get anything done.
So after that happens, we get a little bit of the war captains and business as usual with Krakoa. But you might remember from way back in Ten of Swords, if Gorgon has died, Cyclops has stepped down from his responsibilities as a war captain to be the leader of the X-Men, and they need replacements. And they've selected Bishop to replace Cyclops and Psylocke to replace the Quanon Psylocke, I should say, to replace Gorgon. Regardless of what the council members agree with, they don't really ask permission, they tell. And magic is pretty good at telling what she wants to happen. They agree that this is a great honor, and they enjoy the start of traditions. And that is when the council, while the war captains go to celebrate, the council meets one last time. And when they meet, they talk about filling some of the empty chairs. Magneto and Professor X, though, get flustered when Mystique starts talking about how she wants to fill the chair. And in an uncomfortable and unlikely scenario, none other than Destiny is revealed to be present at the meeting and the one that Mystique is nominating for the open council chair.
Which, of course, Mr. Sinister finds hilarious.
Oh, it is hilarious.
I don't think Sinister... I mean, I think Sinister finds it hilarious because I'm guessing he had a hand in doing
this. I'm assuming he brought her back because didn't Mystique go to him at some point during the comics? I don't remember it, but I feel like I'm putting it in my own brain. But I feel we saw her go to him in one of the last comics that she was featured in.
I don't remember that, but I also feel like Professor X is a real idiot if he thought Sinister would just, like...
Well, even this issue, there's a page where they're kind of talking about their plan to scrub Destiny out, and right. Xavier shows up to get... He's like, all right, we got all the genetic samples, and Sinister's like, yep, that's all of them. Like, he just has that coy smile with his hands
up. It's one of those things, like, why had you not gone after this earlier? Like, Moira said, you can't have the precogs. You cannot have precogs. This is a problem. So basically, you didn't buy into her stuff enough to go, yeah, you know what? Your two rules, I don't care.
I'll tell you why. Because they're totally inept. They think that a good plan is to just keep throwing X-Force into space, no matter how many times it fails. And then when Moira goes, how come you guys can't not do anything? That. Xavier's like, who knows, man? Maybe it's inevitable. What can we do?
Hold on. Not just throwing X-Force into space. The same team over and over. It's not like they're throwing different mutants there. It's not like they're going, you know what? Let's throw Blob this time at them. You know,
see if that'll work.
Because... It's got to be this big secret that we have resurrections, but you know what? Our greatest enemy? I'm going to throw the same mutants at him.
Over and over.
Over again.
Well, let's go ahead and break this comic down. So, starting from the top, we got some familiar imagery with the birthing sequence in the chamber. What did you guys think of this? I think right away you get that grandiose Hickman House of X feel. The colors are spot on. The panels aren't necessarily laid out exactly the same with like Emma. It's different, but like it definitely harkens back to the old thing. And it definitely right away you get those Hickman feels.
Yes. Oh, 100%. This feels like a Hickman comic. The way it is laid out with Emma standing over them and the kind of gloat, like Hickman does Emma kind of well with the ego that she has. What would you say, Charles, to me, my X-Men, like this position of power at a certain point?
No, and feel like this is coming from issue, like the chronological, it's issue one, but is this like going to be something that happens in issue 3 or 4, you think?
Yes. Yeah. I think this is a perfect opening. It harkens back to Hox Pox, which is so awesome, especially given where we're at, that we're at the end. That Infernal.
We're talking about House of X. It's the good old days.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, in the sense of this podcast, it was when we first started. This was, you know, some of the first panels that this is harkening back to. You're right. The art immediately puts you back there. I think it just gets you excited for what can be. And it immediately, in this first issue, is already setting up, when does this take place, right? Did something happen? And now we're catching up? Or is this something that happened that's going to happen and we're going to see?
That familiar, uncomfortable feeling.
Yeah. Perfect opening.
Yeah. We jump right into some action. I'm not going to spend too much time on the inserts, although you guys kind of can bring them up where they're relevant in the text. But we get to the action scene here. The only action we're really going to get in this issue, kind of a pointless action scene too, because they tell you before you even see the action scene how it's going to play out, basically.
Yeah, that it's just we're throwing X-Force in, they always lose. Every time.
Kelsey, is this action scene like something you enjoyed still, even knowing the outcome?
100%. I still enjoyed it because Wolverine clawing up Nimrod and then just seeing more of them in the Bastion form is...
Nimrod's still doing the whole talking to them until it's like, oh, you are so-and-so. This is what you can do. this is how I defeat you, and then defeating them. It goes back to showing why Orcus is a penultimate bad guy organization for them.
But Dane, do you you enjoy this fight scene as well in the kind of the Nimrod versus X-Force scene?
Sure. I mean, comics 50 pages. We need a little bit of action, right?
Yeah.
And the inserts come first telling you fail. You don't know. Maybe this is the one where they succeed. We don't know exactly where it falls in time.
Also, I like the ones they do the insert of Magneto has been trying to pull the station into the sun.
Yeah, just like
it's brought up. So, and it's like had aneurysms. Like, that's why he keeps dying.
But no, I think it's good, especially from, like, Kelsey is right. I think it makes the inevitability of it when you see that it's just like, oh, they were never going to win this. There's like a dozen of these Nimrods. And it feels scary. It's intimidating. This feels like a good villain for a big four-book super story.
Yeah. I also like that. So you get to see the Mystique, if you look at that Orcus events, is number 9 when she tried to destroy the station her way. But then all the other ones are just like X-Force.
They hired a mercenary team at one point, right?
The Brood Swarm?
That's true.
There's a Brood Swarm.
Yeah, there's a Brood Swarm. But other than that, it's just throwing X-Force.
There's Assassins from Avalon.
Yeah, that's
right. Yeah.
But no, Orcus and the station already feels like new, but also classic X-Villain. Like, right, this just feels like they've been around for forever, and we just got them back.
I agree, and I love that they're keeping the X-Men bodies. Like, there's just like a pile of Wolverine bodies in cage, like little.
Right, they're just spaces. Why would you not just keep these to study them? It's honestly, it's a terrible plan by Krakoa.
Yeah, it all like puzzlingly bad.
Right, exactly.
It shows their lack of experience as a playing on a national stage.
Yep. So moving through, we've got the. Did you guys have any thoughts on Omega Sentinel, or just kind of like same old, same old?
Honestly, kind of forgot that was going on.
I enjoy Omega Sentinel. I want to see if there's more going on with her as we move forward.
Oh, that she's there?
I wouldn't have hated an Omega Sentinel comic in this run. Way more than 1,900 issues of Excalibur.
I just don't think, as far as this issue goes, she was all that prevalent. Like, she was there.
Yeah. But it would have been cool to have a series just Omega Sentinel doing Orcus stuff.
I wouldn't have hated that, an Orcus book.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. All bad guy all the time.
Now, as Kelsey mentioned, we have the Mystique Destiny scene here. Flashback to Powers of 10, where she learns that she can't cure mutantdom no matter what she tries. And Destiny and Mystique kind of allude to that Moira is a problem for them. Do you think, is it pure revenge with Moira? Why she wants Destiny dead? What's the Destiny Mystique or Destiny Moira connection? What do you guys think?
I'm wondering if she wants to try and do the cure mutantdom regardless.
Yeah, because like she has one
like
of the
she's
the
tired
panels
of being
you see,
resurrected.
She's holding the book. Like, she has the book of her old team in her 10th life, and she's looking at it. So I think it's clear they've indicated she has some potential ideas about that. Or that she's
Is it in this section where it gets mentioned that Moira could die if they killed her before her mutant power harvested?
Yeah, but the problem is Moira...
Why doesn't Moira just kill herself before she turns 12 or whatever?
I don't think...
If she
think
were
she
looking to get rid of it,
life.
You mean?
Like, why cure mutantdom if you're just, like, tired of being burned alive and shit? Just kill yourself.
Maybe you still want to live that complete life without it?
I don't know. One last shot at it.
Or is it just for her so she can make the perfect world for mutants and then cure herself so it never gets restarted?
Yeah, I mean, if her real goal is curing mutantdom, right? Like, that is, she thinks that is the way that they get out of this, because she has seen mutants always lose, right? So maybe the way out for them, and she genuinely wants this, is just they're not being mutants.
Yeah.
I think the removal of Destiny...
Well, I think it's more likely that she wants to remove... I think she thinks that she kills herself, it might end all reality for all she knows or something. But if she, like, cures herself, maybe, like, the mutants can win and be happy or something. I don't know.
I do think the Destiny thing is pure revenge.
Oh, yeah.
I think that is... I don't think there's any concern about timelines with Precox. I just think she knows this woman will get her. And it is, I got to get her before she gets me.
I agree with that. Yeah. I liked, I did like her back and forth with Professor X and Magneto, though. When Professor X brings up the idea, it's like, have you ever tried allying with the machines? Like,
dude,
but that thought, I'm like, I mean, I guess, but it's like, so you're just saying it's like become one with the Sentinels. It just can't makes it harkens back to that Powers of 10 stuff where the humans ally with the machines and they basically are machines.
Well, I mean, like, is there not a point where the mutants just go, we want Mars? Like, is there not a point where you just go, fuck it, we're going to be a Rocco?
Oh my God, you're killing me here.
Sorry. Or like you know what I mean? Like, screw it, we're just going to be a Rocco.
No, you're going to just
change. Just jump, just do that one.
Just leave Earth. You get it. Sentinels, you win. Humankind gets Earth.
It's yours.
Ship mutants off to us. No hard feelings.
That's not going to fly, though, because they'll say,
well, we can literally terraform whatever planet we want. We don't need Earth.
Humans will get mad and go, no, we're going to come to Mars now.
Well, then humans will get mad at aliens, too. Why not turn the Sentinels on?
They do get mad at aliens.
Dude, it's not even subtle anymore that Xavier and Magneto are the villains here.
Like, oh, right, no.
Some of
the villains.
Right. But it's, when they go to meet Moira, they are wearing the all black uniforms.
Right.
Like, this is, yeah. I mean, it's very classic storytelling. But I mean, over and over, we've just seen this, that they're like, yeah, Mystique, we'll give you what you want. Psych. And then they come to Moira and it's just like, no, we respect you. Not really. Like, it's just very clear. Like, the manipulation, the control at this point is just expected.
They're like a real government.
Right. They're the bad guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you guys think of Good Beast?
Oh.
did we miss Good Beast? What was
Good Doctor?
Beast?
No, he means Dr. Smythe. Beast.
Dr. Smythe.
Orcus Beast.
Oh. I like him.
He seems like a reasonable person.
Yeah, I don't think he's all that out of whack on anything.
I haven't seen him do anything near as evil as I've seen Beast do. So
right, like the moral questionability of Dr. Smythe does not seem to be the same as Beast himself.
He just calls customer
service about the code.
So this just seems like Hickman connecting some of those tie-ins from X-Men, his run on X-Men. He takes Horticulture, he takes Terra Verde, he takes that initial prison where there were like the bionic monkeys that Orcus had and the red AIM troopers. This just feels like a lot, like maybe not important that's Dr. Smythe or anything like that or Horticulture, but just a fun way to tie back some things together and reveal that Orcus is aware that there's something with Moira on the board.
And again, the thing with Orcus, what makes them great villains is that I'm sitting here going, it's like, I'm saying they're the villains, but I'm having a hard time arguing against their point of view.
No, I'm with you 100%.
Like, it's like,
and look at that unity. Look at all these groups they brought together. AIM
Shield. Shield is in there.
Right? If you could bring that many people together, how bad can you be?
Right. Guy Rich is in there doing whatever he does anymore. I don't know.
Monkey scientist?
I think technically an ape, but
what have they done? That's what have they done this evil? That's what I want to know.
To be fair,
they've defended themselves from a never-ending assassination squad.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's go to Moira's no place here. Of note that we might not have mentioned though is that X-Force is monitoring. Orcus monitoring them. So the I think the most interesting thing about this is will X-Force discover Moira's no place?
By
not necessarily that they're following, by monitoring the people. It's almost like The Departed when they're like following the people, following the captain, they realize that they have a mole inside kind of thing.
Right.
Right.
So that's the most interesting thing that can come of that is what if X-Force figures out that Magneto and Professor X have a secret place.
Right. By doing the jobs they've been assigned, they stumble finally. Upon
this. So what'd you guys make? We've already touched on the fact that the lack of respect by Magni and Professor X to Moira is different than what we probably saw in anything in House of X, right? Like, that's a new development, I would say. Maybe the powers get in their head. Would you agree or no?
100%. I think so.
You know, they kind of hinted at their behavior, though, beforehand. I mean, there were certain things, I think, when they were running the country and they were starting to kind of push her to the no place idea. I don't know. I feel like House of X and Powers of Ten, Professor Xavier's, like, ego started to just climb.
I would agree. True. Xavier was there, but I feel like there
Magneto's
was still
been
that...
doing the same. Magneto has been the same.
Yeah, he's always had that. But I'll say this. I just feel like their arrogance is at an all-time high in these panels.
Yeah.
Like, even more than earlier.
I think they probably held her in some reverence early when they figured this stuff out. But then they got the plan together, and then they're like, hey, we got to, like, put you in this bubble where nobody can see you. And then they've had basically unlimited power for... How long has this been in real time? They've been running the most powerful country in the world, and then it's just like,
maybe in the galaxy for all
solar system,
right? And they're like, now we got to go talk to that lady again and figure out. Like,
do you think it is an issue of jealousy on who can save mutantdom? That because character wise, they had been at odds as far as what is the right way to save the mutant race, and then all this time they find out, oh, Moira's this very powerful mutant who really just has the ideas, and she lays it out for him, like, this is really how you should do it, like, talks down to them, and they're so used to, in their own heads, no matter what iteration you get of them, they're so used to being the top dog.
I'm glad you said that. Okay, so is there a little bit of an analogy here of Hickman just being the idea guy, and now we've got it, and we don't need him anymore?
But you think Hickman has written himself Moira?
Okay, you hear me? And then there's a part earlier with Orcus. There's a part with Orcus where they're like, "Why do the X-Men keep doing this?" And it's like, simple, because they're not dying, they're not evolving, like, because they're not willing to die.
They're just stuck in phase one.
I'm just saying.
No, that is actually
middle finger. I like it. I take that.
That is actually a pretty hot take theory that he is writing himself as Moira. That he is the catalyst for all this, and that, you know,
Professor X and Magneto and their arrogance.
They're Duggan and Percy, and they're just like, all right, man. I guess we don't really need you.
I know.
Oh, they want to go after Duggan now. Now it's personal.
No. You can go after Duggan. I just think Percy I don't think he's playing the game.
No. I'm just kidding. But
I think Percy just writes Wolverine. He doesn't really know what he's doing.
He doesn't even know there are other books.
He goes where he wants to go.
Yeah. So Magneto, Professor X, they go about their own ways. Magneto goes to his island where there's apparently a Cerebro backup of everybody, which I find, they're not just backups on backups, because I've always brought that up. Why would you not have a million backups? Why aren't there backups on backups on backups?
I think there are. There are like five or six cradles, right?
My question is, that's Magneto's island? Because that whole time I was expecting Namor to show up.
Yeah, that's Magneto's island where they did
the gala.
Was it the Hellfire Gala?
Really? With all the, like, Krakens and stuff on it?
Yeah, because remember, that's when he forms it. That's in his solo issue or whatever, the giant size.
I was really expecting Namor to show up. Like, I was like, oh, they're going to make some deal with Namor. Okay.
No, there's like six cradles. And
yeah.
So I think that's them securing one of the cradles, because that's how you to control backups, you'd have to control those.
Yeah,
but apparently
then we got Professor X destroying all the trusting Sinister to destroy all those samples.
Yeah, that'll happen.
So is the last panel supposed to be like samples that are hidden or samples that are destroyed? It almost seems like this panel is showing you that he's got three vials of.
If I remember correctly,
but he hands him one.
But if I remember correctly, in the issue that had Mystique attacking the Orcus Station. I believe it ended with her going to Sinister.
I mean, maybe you're right. I don't think so, but maybe you're right.
The other thing is, I don't know if you guys have any theories off of this, but that last panel, it's SN3 is what it reads in Krakoa. But I don't know. No SN3. Theories personally, but SN3. And there are three there, so theoretically they would be. And you can kind of see the very far left, and it looks like they are. It's an S. So I'm guessing whatever it is, it's SN1, SN2, SN3. It's clearly ominous that Sinister is, as always, up to something.
Well, her name is Irene Adler, so it's not that.
It's not that. I know, that was the first thing I checked.
Interesting. So, sample maybe, number three?
Maybe.
I don't know. So we can keep going from there. We got Moira, who's like, okay, like, we'll get rid of her, whatever. I do wonder... I just don't know how to feel about this. All right, so we've also got, you know, the little section here with Cypher and Warlock, and they show the girl being awake. Is that any significance to anybody, his wife or whatever?
Bay the Blood Moon? Yeah. No, I don't know why these pages are here. I don't hate them, but it doesn't... For everything, it seems so tight. Like, everything means something. And maybe this will.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, there's definitely been something going... Remember, there's theories with Cypher and Warlock, and the Warlock being on plants and stuff, and the Krakoa connection. It's been a big part of this for a long time.
It may be a big thing that's coming up, and this is just an opportunity for Hickman to be like, hey, don't forget, guys. Like, we laid some groundwork for this a year and a half ago, and that's there. Just keep that in mind.
Although it definitely feels like maybe the Warlock being on the plant was just Warlock chilling out, and it doesn't feel like as big of a thing as it used to be. Because remember when we used to be like, techno-organic virus?
Right.
Techno-organic. Something's going on. It's being organic. Corrupted.
Yeah.
So then we get the jump, which not connected with that short little stint. So I think Cypher, something coming up. And, you know, Araka was a big part of his plan. So we'll see if anything comes with Bay of the Blood Moon too. We get the new captains. The big note here is just Cyclops flexing and saying, these are who I picked. And seems is, like,
I'm glad.
Exactly the note that I wrote. Well, the note that I wrote for this was literally, just let me find it real quick. Enjoy the captain flex.
I like that.
Because that is exactly what it is.
I'm so glad to see Cyclops just be like, dude, I have so much experience here. I've done so much. I'm going to make my own decisions. You guys can take a walk. I don't care.
It does make the vanity of Professor X and Magneto seem even stupider.
Right.
But like, you have no control. You've never had control of anything. Like, the only thing you've done is put Sabretooth in a prison.
He's no longer
And we know that's going away.
But the idea that Cyclops is no longer your pet, you know, it's like, no, I make my decisions. Yeah, I'm going to run the X-Men. I'll show up to be a captain here to help defend Krakoa. But no, I'm not
going to. I'm mature enough to know I shouldn't be the one in charge, given my responsibilities. But, and then you are 100% right, though, that Exodus says something that he just basically says, hey, man, you want to test me? Right here. Come and find out.
Right. It's like, yeah, I'm not threatened by any of you anymore.
I think Psylocke replacing Gorgon is a good use. She feels like she fits what
the
captains are.
She also uses a katana.
Fills that
not
niche.
A name sword, but
also
I like magic telling off Emma too.
You always like magic though.
Yeah.
But it was good.
But it's on brand and it's
solid
good.
Magic, yeah.
Was there a part of you that wished it was magic over Bishop?
Over as the new war captain or the
as the new
captain
commander.
Oh, magic is in charge.
I just mean, especially when this was coming, and like you have the panel with Storm bringing, like Storm has the crown. I was sort of like, oh, maybe this has been the point of like the whole buildup of magic. You know what I mean? That there's definitely been an era where she's been
She's too cool for that.
I was about to say, you don't want, like, you need magic. You don't want magic.
Yeah.
You're probably right. I don't think it necessarily fits or would make the perfect sense, but it for a second, I thought that's where all this had been building to.
She's gonna show
How much better would it have been if it was Cable, Kid Cable becoming the new captain, and then they all had swords? Just saying.
What if it's pre-teen Cable?
Just another era of Cable. Yeah. Tween Cable.
Toddler Cable.
When do you get Cable before his eyes all messed up?
Never. Cable is like Resurrection. Xavier always comes back bald. They can't bring him back at a spot when he had hair.
Maybe he has alopecia.
All right, and then so we finally get the final twist here, which is the idea that they're adding a new council member because, like we brought up, like how does your government function whenever like the majority, like you just shrink down the size and it's still fair of the representatives?
Actually, really, I don't think it is fair because Gorgon's back to life. I don't know why he's not sitting on that council.
Well, Gorgon wasn't ever on the council. He's a war captain.
Oh, who's missing on the council? Well, why isn't he war captain?
Plus, it doesn't really affect representation. None of these people were elected.
Who's missing from the council again?
Jean.
Jean.
Oh, she left.
Apocalypse.
He left. Oh, okay. Well, I guess they left. Yeah, I was going to say, it's like any of the ones that were brought back. I'm like,
No, Jean and Apocalypse are the only two gone.
Storm's still there? That seems weird.
No, I think Storm is technically gone.
She's there. Like
she's there. I thought she just runs all of Araco now.
She's sitting at that same table with Kurt.
She runs the galaxy, but she's a
Kurt doesn't sit at any table. He's all like crouched over on stuff all the time.
I do like that Scott is too busy with the X-Men to be to be the captain of the war captains, but Supreme Delegate Queen Storm.
Yes.
Goddess of all.
Voice of the solar system.
Oh, that's
well,
right.
What can voice I say? Women soul. Just multitask better than men.
That one does.
So we've got Destiny reveal. Everybody's got questions. What are your guys' questions? My first one is, even if you do clone her with Sinister, even if that's what happened, which I'm not entirely
convinced. That's what happened. I gotta go looking now.
I think so, but even if you did, how she got the brains?
What do you mean?
Even if the five go rogue and resurrect her.
Dude,
I think it's Emma.
She has precognitive powers, so she shows up.
You think Emma saved Destiny?
Bang.
I think from looking at the panels at the end, everyone's sort of like shocked, surprised.
In their faces.
Emma is not. Emma looks like
Emma and Sinister have shooting grins.
Emma looks like the plan is working, and Sinister looks like the plan is working, but he thinks it's hilarious. And it harkens me back to the beginning of the book that Emma is the one to bring them back. Emma is wearing Cerebro. I think Emma is in on this, and Emma's the one that at least assisted in bringing Destiny back.
Also, the Hellfire Gala, like even Shaw doesn't look upset.
No, he does not.
Well,
I don't know if
he doesn't care.
Emma's had the most to gain from all of this, I feel like, too.
Yeah, I think Emma is behind this. She is 100% my big-time player, given the opening sequence of this book, that they gave us a similar pattern to Hoxpox, that opening scene, but it's Emma is the one standing over things. She's the power player.
I don't know how to feel about
Boom.
It. Boom. I don't think you're wrong. Emma, Mystique, Destiny, Alliance feels like the thing.
I like that it's like Survivor. They formed an alliance. They literally have an island to kick people off of, too.
It's true. Yeah, I think this book's good. But it's just like Hox and Pox. You'd see the whole thing to see what
But
it
I've
is.
Seen Hox Pox, so I'm excited.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, overall, this brings that excitement back. It's like, oh my god, we waited over two years for this. And I think a lot of it's the art. I want to make sure to call that out, that really.
But even then, I feel like they get the benefit of looking at all that groundwork. Like, this is visually, this is very much what Pepe Larraz and RB Silva did. There's a look here, and you're just following it.
That's what I mean, though.
Now, like, granted, sometimes impersonating great artists isn't easy.
Sure. But I just think that, like, this was such a good. I don't know. It does feel like that.
Yeah. I was hoping that this book was the whole series.
What?
Like from X.
You hoping it'd be 200 pages?
So let's talk about the X-Men experiment. Like, we're back. It's good. But, like, it just kind of, I think I would have preferred if X-Men was an ongoing written by Hickman and we and like the side books were clearly the side books. And I kind of, in hindsight, I just don't like how they did like the every book's important thing and then they weren't and things were happening, but they weren't kind of thing. Like,
oh, that's fair.
It's a criticism that I feel like I have in that the head of X experiment, like, I feel like it was just like a lot of filler, just like every time. Every book became a tie-in that was an ongoing series.
Yeah, I think that's a fair criticism.
Books didn't
think...
have agency the way that normal books do. It was like, it was almost worse and detrimental to the line because most books had no agency and felt like tie-in books to the, it was like Civil War... Exile, Civil War, Excalibur, Civil War, this, right. Like, very few books were able to, like, capture anything.
But instead of having to fill the time of an event, you have to fill the massive gaps between events.
Yes, you're doing a whole ongoing of event.
Of tie-ins. No, I think it's a totally fair criticism. It doesn't mean that there haven't been good books.
Moments, yeah.
Yeah, but it just, but I do get what you mean. It can
just drag. Like every event, like, right. It's like, there's good tie-ins. Like, sometimes the tie-ins are even great, like Fear Itself, X-Men were. But like, it's just like, I don't know, just not. But.
No, I think it's a totally fair criticism, but this puts me back in the mindset of Hox Pox. And I've said it two or three times, but yeah. I'm excited.
Yeah.
Yep.
Agreed.
Well, let's save the danger room for next time. We got 50 minutes deep in this episode. But I'm so excited for Inferno number 2. We'll come back when that issue comes out. We're not gonna be here next week. We're just gonna pop up for the Inferno book. So
all Inferno all the time.
We'll be blazing next week, next time we are on here. All right,
next month.
Later. Hi, and thanks for listening to the Examination Podcast. If you enjoyed the podcast, write us a 5-star Omega level review. That would make us mutant and proud. We would really appreciate it. Me and the guys love talking nerd, and we want you to be a part of the conversation as well. If you have any topics you want to discuss, questions to ask, or suggestions for the Marvel 20 Questions Danger Room segment, you can always get connected with us. Email us at q.examination@gmail.com. Remember, examination is examination. You can also follow us on our Twitter handle, @examination, spelled the same way. Or visit our website, examination.blogspot.com. Thanks again for listening. We love having you be a part of our community, and we can't wait to hear from you. See you next week.